Good morning. Will the House Taxation Committee please come to order? And Ms. Sangre, would you please call roll?
Vice Chair Fern.
Here.
Vice Chair Welch.
Here.
Representative Abbott.
Excused.
Representative Brewster.
Here.
Representative Buckley.
Here.
Representative Dunwell.
Here.
Representative Fielder.
Here.
Representative Caleb Hinkle.
Here.
Representative Kazmaier.
Excused.
Representative Kearns.
Excused.
Representative Rhonda Knudsen.
Here.
Representative Malone.
Here.
Representative Marler.
Here.
Representative Mitchell.
Here.
Representative Sheldon Galloway.
Here.
Representative Thane.
Here.
Representative Trebus.
Here.
Chair Beard.
Here.
We have a quorum present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Sangre. Would everyone make sure that your cell phones are silenced? That includes committee members and guests in the room. If you need to take a phone call, please take it outside. Those of you on Zoom, when we call for proponents and opponents after a bill hearing being introduced, please raise your hand and be ready to testify. Let's see, and just remember that your testimony is being made part of the public record. We have four bills scheduled for hearing today. First up, we have House Bill 516. Representative Harvey, would you like to open on your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Tax Committee. My name is Representative Derek Harvey. That's H-A-R-V-E-Y. And it's a pleasure to be in front of you today. My first time in front of the Tax Committee this session. So thank you. Today I bring you House Bill 516. And really the title of this bill tells the majority of the story. This is an act revising laws related to the entry on property by the Department of Revenue property valuation staff. And this provides that the department staff may enter the property without permission only under certain conditions, and providing that if the conditions do not apply, the department staff simply needs to make an appointment with the property owner. Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill was brought to my attention by some constituents in Butte Silver Bow County pertaining to the Department of Revenue staff coming onto their property unannounced and causing a burden to them. And if we look at the language that we're striking out of the existing law, you'll see that it's a pretty lengthy process just for the landowner to ask the department to make sure that the resident is on the property when they are there. And it puts the burden on the landowner to respond to the state and tell them that we want to be on our property when you come onto our property. In this bill, as you see in the language being stricken out, November 30th of each year, the department will publish in the newspaper a general circulation notice to each county that they may be coming to the area and coming onto properties in the area. And then it puts the burden onto the landowner to then write back to the state and tell them that we would like to be there or our agent would like to be there. This is really a burden on the landowner annually to watch the newspaper for this notice. And another problem with existing law is there's no triggering event which allows them onto the property. They can just decide to come onto the property when they feel that they want to do an evaluation and look around. So the new language you see proposed in the bill on page 1, line 20 through 23, this puts those triggering events into the law. And so the agents would only be able to come onto the property if the property was sold within the last 12 months, if there was new construction done on the property within 12 months, or if the new structure or improvements to existing structures increase the square footage by 10%. And with that, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I have the folks here that brought this bill to my attention, and I'm sure you'd much rather like to hear more from them than me. And I'll be back up to close. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Harvey. First, we're going to be looking to hear from proponents in the room, and I hope that you have signed in outside the room. And we'll just have our first proponent come up to the podium, please. Spell your name and let us know who you're affiliated with, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having us here today. My name is Michael Markarian. Last name is spelled M-A-R-K-A-R-I-A-N. And I brought this information to the attention of Representative Harvey because of personal experience I had. I'm a relatively new citizen of Montana. I came from Texas, and I built a home. And in the process of moving back and forth, I wasn't here full time, and I noticed on my security cameras somebody coming up to my house after the gate was locked and no trespassing signs, and ringing the doorbell and leaving a car, and I thought it was a salesperson. When I came back into town, realized it was a tax assessor. And, you know, I called and said, hey, what rights did you guys have to get on my property without permission? They said, that's part of the law. We're allowed to do that. And I was shocked that was actually a law here. And they said, if you don't like it, you have to follow this convoluted process that I actually read, going through a process of responding to them by letter every year within 30 days of their notice in a newspaper. And I thought that was a burden on not only me, but any other citizens in the community. And it's not just for new construction like what I had. It's also for anybody has, I mean, this is basically giving the rights to a game warden kind of rights to somebody to get on someone's property without permission at all. And under the guise of I'm assessing a property or taking a look around. And I think that's wrong for the citizens. I think that burden should be on the department. I feel that that's something that if they make an appointment, I'd be happy to have them come on the property when I'm there and I can take them around. I just don't want people on the property when I'm not present. And I think that's fair. I don't have much else to say. If there's any questions at the end, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Markarian. Next proponent, please. Step forward, please. Let us know who you are and who you are affiliated with.
Madam Chair, members of the board, my name is Richard Pittman, last name P-I-T-T-M-A-N, sorry, a little nervous. Moved from Alaska 2 years ago and was actually kind of shocked, like my friend over here, Mr. Markarian, on the access that the state employee believes he can just walk onto the property without any notification whatsoever. I'm retired, so I have a lot of time, so I'm did a lot of research on the laws and was actually stunned at the extent to which you have to go through to file an appeal in that place. And I am currently in an appeal process. I did read where you had to make an appointment for the assessor to come out, which I did. He showed up. Also, my main problem was when they were doing the appraisal, I asked who he had actually pencil whipped the appraisal and stated that I had a completely finished basement. I invited him out. We looked at it, and he insisted that we were going to go into the house room by room. Pardon me, nobody's coming to my house. It is my private property. Somebody I don't know is not coming into my house. It has been, like I said, I'm retired. I got time. I like to do the research. But I feel it's completely inappropriate for anybody to enter my property unless it's a law enforcement with a warrant. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pittman. Seeing no further proponents in the room, we're going to go to the Zoom feed to see if anyone has registered to be a proponent. Ms. Simmons?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, now we're going to go to opponents in the room. Do we have any opponents? Seeing none, how about opponents on Zoom?
Madam Chair, I have Corey Hoffland.
Is that an informational witness or an opponent?
Madam Chair, we were informed this morning that it's actually an opponent at this point. It was a change.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Hoffland.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Corey Hoffland, that's K-O-R-Y, last name H-O-F-L-A-N-D. I'm the division administrator for the property assessment division. Madam Chair, I am sorry if this caused any confusion. I found out late yesterday afternoon that the director would like me to be an opponent to this bill. I was originally scheduled to be informational, so sorry for any confusion there. I contacted Megan as soon as I found out. Madam Chair, with that, the department rises in opposition to House Bill 516 for several reasons. This bill places many burdens on an already thinly staffed property assessment division in a state that continues to add property at a very high rate. The bill creates inefficiencies and will lead to inaccurate property data. The current statute already allows for statewide processes for notifying taxpayers that we will be in an area and allows for the process, the taxpayers to schedule an appointment to meet with staff if they want to be on site when we do our reviews. There are statutes that require us to review properties, and part of that is the Realty Transfer Certificate Act, which requires us to verify sales whenever they occur, and also sets lien dates and times for when property must be put on the tax rolls. On page 1, line 20, the 12 months is very arbitrary and does not harmonize with a 2-year reappraisal cycle. It would be very difficult for an appraiser to know exactly when the property was started construction and whether they're within their 12-month period. Many times on a 2-year cycle, we're there a year after or more than a year after the construction has taken place, but before the next reappraisal cycle. On line 21, again, the 12 months is very arbitrary and does not harmonize with a 2-year appraisal cycle. On line 22, we don't quite understand the meaning of this. New construction is already listed in sub B. The appraiser also is not going to know in most cases whether the construction is over a 10% increase in square footage just by looking. Also, in many cases, if you're not allowed to at least walk up and knock on the door, you may not be able to see the additions or the construction and the extent of it. On page 2, lines 13 and 14, contacting taxpayers, especially out-of-state taxpayers, can take a significant amount of time. We do not carry phone numbers for taxpayers, and what we will have in many cases is nothing more than a mailing address, and in many cases it could be a very long amount of time before we're able to reach and contact a taxpayer. Relying on estimates is a hard thing, and it creates inaccuracies, and the property record cards are not going to be accurate. In Western Montana, for example, a lot of houses you don't see from the road. You can't even see them. It's solid trees. For an appraiser to try to estimate when they can't even see the property is going to be quite the burden, and it's going to result in appeals and increased time in the courtroom to resolve these issues. Madam Chair, members of the committee, we rely on building permits, and permits in cities and towns is one thing if they have them. Currently, there is no statewide permitting process. There are statewide electrical permits if you're starting from scratch and putting in electrical or a septic or a well. Those are statewide permitted, and we will receive those. Any other kind of construction, there is no permitting process. We don't know it's there. Currently, 15.7.111 Montana Code Annotate requires us to complete statewide reviews and inspections. We canvass areas. Montana's a very big state, 600 miles wide and 400 miles deep. In many rural counties, we travel hundreds of miles to get to areas and canvass these areas. When we're out there, we may have some permits, but we also have a lot of property that we review and see that is a result of the drive out there. This bill would cause us to turn around, drive back to the office. go through a process of mailing letters and contacting taxpayers and trying to ascertain times to return to that area. The likelihood that we could contact all the taxpayers in that area and schedule appointments on the same dates is highly unlikely. This will result in us returning to the area several times and may result in property not being picked up by the lien date as required by statute. In fiscal year 2020, PAD employees in state vehicles traveled over 750,000 miles in the state of Montana in 1 year. This is going to add to this. We have done a very thorough analysis, and as a result, we do have a fiscal note on this. Not counting appeals, mailings, other things that we're going to be required to do that will cost money, we will be required to add two FTEs in tax year 2022 and an additional five FT in 2023 to be able to complete our reviews and pick up property as required on lien dates. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for all of these reasons, the department respectfully is in opposition to this bill and would ask for a no pass. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hofflin. Do we have any further opponents at this time?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any informational witnesses in the room? Any informational witnesses? Seeing none, how about on Zoom, Ms. Simmons?
Madam Chair, we have Bryce Katz.
Mr. Katz, good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bryce Katz, that's K-A-A-T-Z. I am also a unit manager with the Property Assessment Division here along with our administrator, Corey Hofflin, to try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any additional informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from committee members. Vice Chair Fern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm going to try Mr. Katz, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Fern.
Madam Chair, Representative Katz. Well, you've heard the testimony and objections from the department. I don't want to put you in a weird spot, but see what the bill says. Do you know of any ways, I guess the best way to say is do you know of any inexpensive ways to reach some of the goals of the bill or some of the testimony we've heard from the folks here about how we can protect their privacy but allow you to get your job done without having to do the going to the extent of the hiring and the fiscal note, which will be pretty expensive.
Madam Chair, Representative Fern, no, there really isn't a cheap, easy way to accomplish this, as our administrator, Corey Hofflin, stated. You know, a lot of our new construction and is picked up just through discovery of being in that area. A typical process, say we get a permit that was filed for a new construction in an area, particularly the rural areas that might take, you know, an hour or 2 hours just for an appraiser to drive there. We try to be as efficient as we can in the work we do. So we aren't just driving out and picking up that one piece of property and coming back, especially in these rural areas that we don't get to as often. When our appraisers go and review those areas, they're not only picking up that new construction, they're doing a comprehensive review of the other property in that immediate area. And that's where, you know, we might, in the process of picking up the one new construction that a permit was filed on, discover three other properties that have new construction on them. Typically we would just stop at those three properties, pick it up while we're out in that area, and go back to the office. With this being in place and having to contact those people, you know, we might have to go back to that same area that might take an hour or 2 hours to drive to four different times based on when we contacted that owner and when they were available to meet us. So in the work we would do in an afternoon and you know, say 2 hours to get there, we would now have to go back to that same area four separate times to accomplish that same amount of work. So there is not a cheap, easy option. We have looked at using oblique imagery and pictometry as tools to help us in our appraisal process. But again, these are not cheap options.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cott. So should we assume that, and we heard testimony from folks who recently moved here from Texas and Alaska, that they possibly have some sort of statewide permitting system that allows their departments of revenue to have easier access and a planning process to let folks know beforehand?
Madam Chair, Representative Fern, I am not quite sure on your question. Are you asking if it would be beneficial if the state had a permit, the state had a statewide permitting system in place?
Madam Chair, Mr. Cutts, I'm asking how significant a factor is it having or not having a statewide system? Is it sort of a deal breaker as far as what's being asked of us from the proponents of this bill?
Madam Chair, Representative Fern, I guess from the department's perspective, having these restrictions in place would, you know, make our jobs much more difficult and make the work we do far less efficient. And we just don't see any way that we would be able to accomplish the same amount of work we're doing now without having to add additional FTE.
Thank you.
Representative Trebus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this will also be for Bryce Cotts.
Mr. Cotts.
Madam Chair, Representative Trebus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Cotts, I just have a little question about liability in my mind. How does that work if an assessor gets hurt on a homeowner's property? I mean, it probably generally covered by workers' compensation, but is there any extra liability that might be to the homeowner in these situations?
Madam Chair, Representative, not that I'm aware of. I think our employees would be on the job, so that would generally fall under a workers' comp claim.
Thank you. Representative Dunwell.
Madam Chair, thank you. Question for Mr. Hoffman, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell, sorry.
Yeah, hi, Mr. Hoffman, Madam Chair. You know, I worked with some of these folks. I didn't go out with them, but I worked side by side with them and were on the phone regularly with them. And, you know, I can tell you it does cut both ways. I mean, there were many occasions where they were fearful of going on people's property for, you know, perhaps surprising them and what might happen, people trying to protect their property. So, you know, this is an issue. And you know, I guess I've got several questions. Let me start with my first one, if I may, Madam Chair. So how and when and what is your notification process, if any? I'm unclear, having listened to you, whether you actually notify people or that you're just authorized to notify people.
Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell, the current statute that's being struck in this bill or being proposed to be struck requires us every year to post in all county newspapers, all newspapers in those counties, our intent that we are going to be in those areas and working in those areas. It allows time for the taxpayer to contact us if they want to be there when we do our inspections. We post those annually. We also post on our website at the same time our intent to be in those areas. Weather permitting, we're working around the clock. That's what we do. There's new construction and destruction at all times. So we're boots on the ground all the time. It's not an easy thing walking up to a person's home. It really isn't. And the majority of the time, it's a very pleasant experience, and everybody knows the need for the assessments and where that money goes when it's generated through the county treasurers. But there are the experience, and there are people that do not like us there. There's been people that have threatened our lives. There have been people that have lit off explosives while we're there. It's a tough situation, but it's a job that needs to be done. We are boots on the ground. We do as much notifying as we possibly can, but all property is taxable no matter what the phase of construction is as of January 1 of that tax year, and we do our damnedest to pick that up.
So thank you. Follow-up, Madam Chair, really just one follow-up and then I'll stop.
One more. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Hoffman, Madam Chair, can you see how this bill might protect the safety of your workers as well?
Madam Chairman, Representative Dunwell, if our employees feel that they are walking into a situation where they shouldn't be there, they turn around and they walk out. If we come up to a home and knock on the door and there are underage children there, we leave a card, we turn around and we walk out. Our people take a lot of precautions, and a lot of times we're working in tandem with another appraiser. So we do what we can, but again, this property has to be picked up. Light of having unmanned aerial systems flying these areas, light of satellite imagery and reviews by software systems such as Apex or oblique imagery, there's no other way for us to get there. Not every house is cookie cutter. Not every house is a perfect rectangle. You know, these are things that have to be boots on the ground, measured and accurately appraised to come up with an accurate market value. And we're required by 15-8-111 to appraise these homes at 100% of their market value. And that's what we do.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any additional questions? Representative Malone.
Madam Chair, for the sponsor.
Madam Chair, Representative Malone.
Madam Chair, Representative Harvey, I'm disappointed you took out, or white, I guess I have to say this, a question. On page 2, 12, and lines 13, and 12 and 13, why did you say if subsection does not apply, up section 2, which would require the department to contact the landowner?
Madam Chair, Representative Malone, I believe in that language there that we added on page 2, line 12, so that's referring back to the new language we put into section 2, which falls on page 1, lines 18 through 22. So this is saying that if the things pertained in subsection 2 does not apply, the department shall contact the landowner. So if those triggering events didn't happen, they can't just go onto the property. They then do have to contact the landowner directly. So that is still in place, that they have to contact the landowner before they go onto the property, unless that new construction has happened to cause those triggering events.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
A follow-up question for Mr. Hoffland.
Mr. Hoffland. Mr. Hoffland?
There we go. I got the option to unmute. Madam Chair, Representative.
Madam Chair, Mr. Hoffland, is it that difficult to find a phone number?
Well,
for a landowner.
Madam Chair, Representative, actually, it really is. You don't see many phone books anymore. You don't see phone booths anymore. Most people are packing cell phones, and even if you do have a phone book in your community, the cell phone number is not going to be listed. We have many, many out-of-state property owners, and for those, absolutely, we do not. A lot of them are in the names of partnerships, S-Corps, C-Corps. We have taxpayers who their address is 100 Wall Street. So, trying to find contact information for a lot of taxpayers is very difficult. We do have mailing addresses, and we estimate that most of the contact would be done by mail.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions from the committee members? Seeing none, Representative Harvey, would you like to close on your bill, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate the good hearing. If anything, I think this bill has definitely highlighted some issues within this process. A couple points I'd like to make off of the opposition, and I was well aware that this opposition was going to happen, but I think I feel strong that this needs to be addressed overall. So first off, what we're doing here is we're taking the burden off of the citizen and putting it back onto the state. Really, the state, and we want the government to be working for us as citizens. Really, this has highlighted a somewhat lack in coordination within within the department and our counties. On top of the building permits, maybe that's a section we need to take a deeper dive into and look at that state building process to make sure that coordination is happening. But there's also another permit that's in place statewide that does give notice to the state, and that's state septic permits. So there should be coordination going on there, so they have a better knowing of what's going on in certain areas. Next point, really this should bring efficiency to the process by causing them to plan ahead, look at these permits, know if new construction's happened, know if a sale's been done, so they're not just arbitrarily driving out to areas and finding problems or not finding problems. Everything could be status quo, but we're still sending people out to those areas. So I see a big lack in efficiency there. They should be contacting folks. And I feel that pertaining to the obtaining the information as far as phone numbers and emails in this bill, with it being new construction or when the property is sold, they will need to go out. Nothing is blocking them from going out and still doing these appraisals. They could obtain that information on the first visit. Another point I'd like to highlight is the current law really has no trigger. And so if there's been no changes to the property, why are we sending folks out there? Another point, we allow, in the state, we allow big businesses such as telecom carriers to self-report on their taxes. So why aren't we putting that same trust into our citizens? Nothing in this bill blocks them from doing their job. It just means that they need to make an appointment as lined out on page 2, line 12. And Madam Chair, I brought this bill forward because these two individuals behind me are working class folks. They did come here from our state, from Texas and Alaska. They retired here. They worked full careers. This was their dream, to come to Montana, buy some property, and enjoy what our state has to offer. But they came to our state and ran into these burdens. And they came from much larger states that have much more rural areas than sheer landmass than our state does. And they have a better process lined out. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I urge you to pass on this bill, and let's correct some of these problems to put the respect back to our citizens. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Harvey. This closes the hearing on House Bill 516. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have the next bill hearing, House Bill 191. Representative Hopkins, would you like to introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Mike Hopkins, H-O-P-K-I-N-S, representing House District 92 out of Missoula, coming here today to bring for your consideration House Bill 191. This is the Keep Your Home Tax Relief Act. Really fast, I do have a handout, Madam Chair, and I know I'm not in the position to be asking the committee questions, but is the bill that the committee has in front of it the bill with the amendment language onto it, or just the amendment itself? Separate? Okay, then I have two handouts, if that would be okay with the chair.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. So the first handout coming over on this side is the actual bill with the amendment language included onto it. Seems like it's a little bit easier to go over from my point of view. The other handout is just giving you a brief look at the change that you might be expecting, given what we're just about to talk about. So this committee, especially over the past couple of sessions, has seen multiple bills attempting to deliver property tax relief for seniors living on a fixed income in the state of Montana. And this committee has seen myself, as well as Senator Hoven, who is the individual who has put this bill together, with me bringing bills to this committee, trying to find a way to get some tax relief to seniors living on a fixed income. Now, legislative sessions are what they are. Budgets are what they are. And so far, we've had trouble getting that into law. We come into this session in a little bit of a different situation, though. We come into this session with a governor on the second floor that has included this in his budget. We come to this session with this bill being on budget. So if we are able to get positive votes from Tax Committee, from the House, from Senate Tax Committee, from the Senate, we will be walking out of these doors having delivered tangible, material relief to Montana seniors living on a fixed income. And the way that we do this, as this committee is very familiar with, is through the homeowner renter, the elderly homeowner renter tax credit. And so, very quickly, for the meat of the bill, what we are doing is the credit cap of $1,000 we are raising to $1,150. And on the exemption, which is currently in your bill at $6,300, we are doubling that to $12,600. Now, what we were trying to do was play around with our dials, our different inputs, and trying to come to a place where we were able to get folks the most relief while allowing us to stay on budget. That is reflected in the amended version of the bill, and I would, of course, ask for due consideration and a due pass on the amendment itself. We have important conversations here in the state of Montana. We have important conversations around the tax climate in the state of Montana, at the state level, especially at the local level, and these are important conversations, but in the meantime, we have folks in localities throughout the state of Montana, especially seniors living on a fixed income, who, I mean, when we were here 2 years ago or 4 years ago, were in very realistic threat of losing their home. They're being pushed into a corner where they're having to decide whether or not they were going to be able to keep the place that they themselves may have grown up in, but certainly the place that they raised their children in. Either that or, you know, being able to afford medicine and food and, you know, the other things that human beings require to live. Now, folks are just losing their homes. I know multiple people from my district that were there when I campaigned in 2016 that are not there anymore. They're in Arizona. You know, they're in Florida. That's not good. And I think that this bill delivers some tangible, material relief to folks that I think every single one of us at one point or another have campaigned on getting relief to that specific population. It does it in a way that's efficient and effective. It does it in a way that's on budget. And I'd like to thank first Madam Chair for her leadership on the issue, and then especially her patience with me here this session and the run-up to this. It's certainly been appreciated from this side of the podium. And I'd like to thank Governor Gianforte for his leadership. It's a very different thing when you have somebody on the second floor that's fighting for this kind of legislation. And I'd like to thank Senator Hoven. This committee knows far better than I do that he's been working in this area forever. In fact, when I first got to the legislature and brought a bill in this area, it was based off of his work. So with that, Madam Chair, I would sit, listen to proponents, opponents, look forward to the conversation, and reserve to close. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll now be looking for proponents in the room. Proponents, please. Step forward, let us know who you are, spell your name, and let us also know your affiliation.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Brendan Beatty, B-E-A-T-T-Y. I'm the director of the Montana Department of Revenue. Before you today, members of the committee, as a proponent for House Bill 191, Representative Hopkins stole most of my testimony, so I'm not going to repeat a whole bunch of it. But, however, what does matter is the low-income elderly really are in a bad position in this state at the moment with property taxes and rising values. In my 25 years as a tax attorney for the Department of Revenue, I've witnessed this many times, the real plight of some of these people when they've come in with nowhere to go but challenge of value. So these increases in values have especially hit the low-income, fixed-income elderly. It's very important to Governor Gianforte and my administration at the Department of Revenue that these low-income elderly people should not be concerned with losing their home due to the rising taxes on them. As Representative Hopkins said, this bill, as amended, amends the current mechanism for low-income elderly assistance on property tax or income tax credits. As amended, it takes it to up from to $1,150. That credit has not been changed. That threshold has not been changed since 1995. We're long overdue for that change to help these people out. Everything else that Representative Hopkins said was also on my list. There's no reason to repeat it. The governor, this is in the governor's budget. This tax relief is covered in the budget. And on behalf of the governor, I urge you to recommend a do pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Beatty. Further proponents in the room? Seeing none. Ms. Simmons, do we have proponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Seeing none. Do we have opponents in the room? Opponents. Seeing none. How about those online?
No, Madam Chair.
Informational witnesses in the room? And those online.
Madam Chair, we do have Mr. Brian Olson.
Mr. Olson, welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chairman. Brian Olson, Olsen. I'm with the Department of Revenue also. I'm available for any technical questions you may have.
Thank you. Now we will go to questions from committee members. Vice Chair Welch.
Madam Chair, question for Director Beatty, please.
Mr. Director.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Welch.
Chair and Mr. Beatty, looking at the fiscal note, and I know the bill's been amended, but we're looking at a fiscal note that has some expense to the state, obviously, doing this. But the number's been lowered from $1,700 to $1,150. So is the governor good with that new reduced number and we can live with that?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Welch, I am not sure if the governor's good with that or not, since I just heard the amendment this morning. In fact, my testimony says $1,700. So I could certainly track that down and get right back to you as quick as possible.
Okay, I assume it's going to be a lower number, so I assume he's good with it if he was good with the higher number, but I'd just like to know that for sure.
Would you like to redirect that to the sponsor?
Yeah, let's try Mr. Representative Hopkins, maybe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. So if you were looking at the original version of the bill where the cap was being lifted from $1,000 to $1,700, obviously reflected in your fiscal note, what we did was not just draw down the $1,700 to the $1,150, but we doubled the exemption on the other side. And what we were looking for there was two things. One, to get the most actual relief to the targeted population that we were looking to deliver the relief to, and two was to come in on budget. Coming on budget for this area means that we are looking at when the amendment is done and when you get the new fiscal note, you will be seeing about $2.9 million in 2021. You will be seeing $2.85 million in 2022, with that descending by about $200,000 or so per fiscal year going forward, which is directly on budget for what Governor Gianforte had included in his budget for the Keep Your Home Tax Relief Act. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins.
Vice Chair Fern.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This is a question for Mr. Olson.
Mr. Olson.
Madam Chairman, Vice Chair Fern.
Madam Chair, Mr. Olson, could you just briefly walk through the process for an applicant to get this tax relief?
Madam Chairman, Vice Chair Fern, yes, thank you. That's a good question. The application is relatively simple. People provide their property tax bill information or rent receipts if they are renters. They complete the amount of household income, which is a little bit beyond just taxable income, but then that is all on a tax form that's submitted to the department. And then we look at the return potentially and issue the refund for the tax credit.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Olson, what you're saying is this is done prospectively, meaning you have to first pay your tax and then you get a refund. Is that how it works?
Madam Chair, Vice Chair Fern, the legislation calls for it to be based on your property tax build. Presumption is that 99% of the folks are going to go ahead and pay their taxes, their property taxes in one way or another anyway. So since the property taxes are paid in arrears, you technically have potential of receiving the refund before you have paid your property taxes, but that's not been an issue in the years I've been involved with looking at this tax credit.
Okay, thanks much.
Representative Thane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for the sponsor, please.
Madam Chair, Representative Thane.
Madam Chair, Representative Hopkins. I'm looking through the definitions, and I don't see elderly defined. Can you tell me what elderly is?
Madam Chair, Representative, I believe it is 62 years and older for the purposes of the tax credit.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Additional questions from the committee. Representative Trebus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This will be for the sponsor as well.
Madam Chair, Representative Trebus.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Representative, I'm just looking on the fiscal note, and usually they check the little box here that says included in the executive budget. Was that just missed, or was this kind of a later thing that the governor noticed and said, hey, let's do this?
Madam Chair, Representative, so when we were first coming into the session, the fiscal note that you have in front of you reflects the original bill draft that I brought with me to the legislative session. As I had said, this committee in past sessions have seen both myself as well as Senator Hoven coming forward with this kind of legislation or working within the area of this property tax credit. So Senator Hoven and I getting together along with the second floor coming up with the new language is what changes that. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any additional questions from the committee? Seeing none. Representative Hopkins, would you like to close on your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, once again, first I'd like to thank the chair for her patience with me here this session. It's been certainly appreciated. And I'd, again, like to thank the leadership of Governor Gianforte. It's a very different thing to have somebody in here working alongside us, fighting for this kind of stuff, including it in the budget itself. This is tangible, material relief to a population of folks that we have all been talking about, trying to get relief to over the last multiple sessions. I don't think that it's trying to solve the entire tax question in the state of Montana, but while we're having those conversations, I think that all of us would agree that the consequence of that conversation having been had should not be Montana seniors losing their homes. So I'd like to thank the committee for their time here this morning. I would ask for a due consideration and a due pass on the amendment. I would ask for due consideration and a due pass on the bill. And with that, I close on House Bill 191 and thank the committee for its time this morning.
Thank you, Representative Hopkins. This closes the hearing on House Bill 191. Yes,
Madam Chair.
Representative Thane. Just a moment, Representative.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just noticed late the fiscal note apparently does not reflect the amendment, and I don't know if that was pointed out. I may have missed it when he said it.
I do believe, Representative Thane, that he did bring that up, and we will be checking with staff to determine when that revised fiscal note will be available.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Dunwell.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, point of a personal privilege, please.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I would just like to inform the members of the committee, and some of you do remember, that bills just like this were brought in previous sessions. I was in my all three previous sessions, I've either sponsored or supported bills like this, and they were actually voted down by Republicans. And I would appreciate if the previous administration is not disparaged in a way that I interpreted that past hearing to do. Yes, I'm sure Governor Gianforte has great plans to help Montanans, but let's not disparage the previous administration that got quite a bit done for working Montanans. And again, a reminder that a lot of these bills to help working Montanans were brought by Democrats in the past, and they were voted down by the Republican majority in the legislature.
Duly noted. Thank you, Representative. Another comment from Representative Tribus.
Point of personal privilege as well, if I could.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the fiscal note, maybe Megan can speak to this too. I don't think we get to see a revised fiscal note unless the bill passes to the floor.
Ms. Moore, would you address this for everyone, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there was a rule change this session. Representative Tribus is correct that used to be the process. However, this session, you can request a revised fiscal note. You would have to first add the amendment, and then you would postpone action until receipt of the fiscal note, and then the chair could request a revised fiscal note. Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that we might just consider moving the bill today in an executive action to add the amendment and then table it until further action after transmittal. If there is no objection, we might just look at doing that. Ms. Moore?
Madam Chair, to be clear, you don't need to table the bill. You would just add the amendment and then postpone action until a future date when the fiscal note is received.
That sounds perfect. Thank you. Now we will go on to a reconfigured bill hearing agenda, and we're going to hear from our own Vice Chair Fern on his Joint Resolution 6. Vice Chair Fern, we're looking forward to your introduction.
Thanks, Madam Chair and Committee. Representative Dave Fern, Whitefish, and the northwest part of the Flathead Valley. And today I come to you with a study bill regarding one of my favorite topics, the coal trust. And I think quite fortunately we've had the opportunity to already have an introduction to the concept, to how this trust works, and we had a great presentation, and I was able to shed some light, I thought, on a direction we were going. And I was able to work a little bit with Madam Chair on this to maybe update it. I want to just start off reviewing a little bit of what kind of grounds this trust, and that is two references in our state constitution. So just to get you a little bit up to date on how some of the rules of engagement on this, when we look at Article 8 in Revenue and Finance, we look under Investment of Public Funds and Public Retirement System and State Compensation Fund Assets. And I would quote by saying, except as provided in the subsection 3 and 4, which I'll briefly mention, no public funds shall be invested in private corporate capital stock. And here are two exceptions, and two exceptions only. Listed as number three, public retirement system may be invested in private corporate stock. And number four, investment estate compensation insurance may be invested in common stock and shall not exceed 25% of the book value of the total. Now, what I've read is significant because it will be touched upon in the study, so keep that in mind. And then let's jump to Article 9, severance tax. 50% of the severance tax will be dedicated to the trust fund. The interest and income from which we may, which the interest income which may be appropriated. The principal of the trust shall forever remain inviolate unless appropriated by vote of 3/4 of the members of each house of the legislature. So that too is very important because it rightfully, in my mind, makes it very difficult to break the trust and break the principle. And it also designates that model we've seen of the 50% going on one side, the 50% going in the trust, and that's the system we're on. So what you have in front of you is the original resolution, and then there's some amendments, a few amendments to it. So I'll just review what the amended version would look like and some of the issues that we would hopefully cover in a trust and in a study. And I should mention that this could fall into coordination with the 50th anniversary of this trust, which is going to come upon us in 2025. And for 50 years, this trust has worked remarkably for the people of Montana. And it was really, really visionary, as you can tell. So what we really want to be looking at is the capacity to meet the demand of the state. And what I mean by that is we've obligated a lot of these funds to do very good things. And we need to understand moving forward if we can continue to meet those obligations or build upon the many things we do. I think also we need to be able to really understand the supply and demand of coal and where this market is going, because this sovereign fund is really predicated on the amount of coal and the severance we get gained from that. So spending some time looking into that will provide more predictability as we move forward in the next 50 years of that. The other issue that I think is worthwhile looking at is whether there are opportunities to diversify the fund. And when I spoke to you a few weeks ago, I sent you a pie chart from the state of New Mexico on their trust fund. And possibly New Mexico is a really good model to look at because not only does it have, to the envy of many of us, $25 billion plus in it, but it's also quite a diversified fund, meaning multi-mineral fund that we spoke about before. So the question in this study might be, are there willing partners? Are there opportunities to diversify moving forward? Or do we need to diversify to maintain the standard we're used to and the outcomes from this fund? And lastly, I'll go back to what I mentioned with Article 8 of the Constitution, and that is the interest rates. And strongly inferred in that Constitution, in our Constitution, is that this fund cannot invest in stocks. As an example, as I mentioned, New Mexico can. And there's some significant differences in looking at that. And so I think it's very worthwhile to proceed with some modeling that would likely be done by the folks downstairs along with the Board of Investments to take a period of time, 20, 25 years, and see what would have occurred if there were such strict limitations on this. And recall that the limitations were wisely established in my mind because back in the old days, you could have a risk-free investment and make pretty good dollars on it. And over the years, those have changed, those rules. So I think it's really worthwhile to look at that. So those are, that is sort of the content of this bill, this study. I think it's just super important to look at this. You know, when we look at this, we look at pensions, we look at the Budget Stabilization Act. We look at some things that keep this state going. They're not controversial. They're very bipartisan. They're real strong anchors to how the state provides services and maintains prosperity. So with that in mind, I would ask you to do pass this, and we'll move it to the floor and move it to the Senate. Thanks much.
Thank you, Vice Chair Fern. It is so heartening to see the sparkle in your eye like you're embarking upon Christmas holiday season or something. Yes, this is an important bill, and your history with explaining it to all of us has been much appreciated. So now we are going to move into our proponents in the room this morning. Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Daryl James. Daryl is with two R's, Y-L. James is the common spelling, and I come to you this morning as the Executive Director for the Montana Infrastructure Coalition. Madam Chair, members, we've been in front of this committee the last several sessions talking about the importance of consistent, reliable, predictable funding for infrastructure. And when I think about the role that the Coal Tax Trust Fund plays in infrastructure funding, it has played that consistent, predictable role in the form of grants for local water sewer type projects, county bridge projects. But I think the level of understanding for most Montanans of the Coal Tax Trust Fund is akin to many of our western rivers. People don't really understand where it originates, and it's often over-appropriated. So I think to the extent that we can educate the legislature and the general public about the importance of that Coal Tax Trust Fund, where that money comes from, and personally, I don't think coal is dead. I think we're certainly seeing declining revenues that we need to be mindful of. But then thinking about where we do spend that money, where we commit that money. So I fully support this effort. And I might just note that when we looked as a coalition at different funding models for infrastructure, the only thing that Montana really lacked compared to other states were public-private partnership tools and what people termed as an infrastructure bank. And the more I looked into that model, it's very much akin to our Coal Tax Trust Fund. We just need to leverage it better. And I agree with the sponsor that we need to look at opportunities to leverage that money, to maybe increase the value of that money through other investments. But just like with HJ 35 over the interim, that conversation was cut short. I think that we really do need to start digging into the details of our funding structure and our ability to fund critical infrastructure in the state of Montana. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. James. Do we have any further proponents in the room? Seeing none, how about those online, Ms. Simmons?
Madam Chair, we have the first one is Mr. Tim Burton.
Good morning, Mr. Burton.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Tim Burton, B-U-R-T-O-N, Executive Director of the Montana League of Cities and Towns, and we represent all 127 incorporated communities in Montana and stand in support of HJ6. Madam Chair, Representative Fern is always so thorough on his introductions that I don't have a lot to add. I'll date myself a little bit that I was an employee at the Department of Commerce in the early 90s when the Treasure State Endowment Program was created under the Coal Tax Trust. Madam Chair, there's been a lot of water under the bridge since then, and my pun is intended.
Yes.
I think that we go through every 2 years the budget process, and appropriations pays a lot of attention to the Coal Tax Trust and the Treasure State Endowment Program. But I think it's time to take a holistic look, as Representative Fern suggests, to study and analyze where we've been and where we are and where we might be going with this critically important program. So we stand in support of House J6. And Madam Chair, I rarely do this, but I would ask to be excused because I have a committee hearing taking place somewhere else right now, if that would be allowable.
You are excused, Mr. Burton. Thank you for coming this morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Additional proponents.
Madam Chair, we have Ms. Ann Hedges.
Ms. Hedges, good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Thank you. Ann Hedges with the Montana Environmental Information Center. And I also think that this is a very timely idea. In fact, I think that this is an idea that we would have been prudent to have done a couple of years ago. And I just want to talk about the component of this that talks about the coal market. You know, and when we settled with the owners of the coal strip plant for the closure of units 1 and 2 in 2016, we agreed that those units could continue to operate until July of 2022. Those units would still be operating under the agreement that we struck with the owners. However, in June of 2019, Talon, the operator of the plant, sent out a press release saying that the financial challenges that the plants was facing was causing them to have to close those two units early. They said, "We have been unsuccessful in making the units economically viable. Fuel constitutes the bulk of our operating costs, and our repeated efforts to negotiate lower fuel prices with Westmoreland Rosebud Mining, the plant's sole and historically permitted fuel supplier, have been rebuffed. Rather than working with us to keep the units 1 and 2 open, Westmoreland is proposing to increase the unit's fuel costs going forward." I'm not blaming Westmoreland for that. I think that that is a really common practice that's happening across the industry. The problem is you're not seeing coal be able to compete with natural gas prices and renewable prices. Just yesterday in Senate Business and Labor, that same company said, "It's our view that the economics should be driving force in determining the future of the coal strip plant." Remember that the coal strip plant is fed by one of the largest mines in the state. And they said, quote, "Candidly, with market forces continuing to make it difficult for coal to compete against low natural gas and the increasing demand for renewables, keeping units 3 and 4 viable remain a growing challenge."
Ms. Hedges, Ms. Hedges, yes. Excuse me, can we keep this more to the purpose of this joint resolution, yes, and the study prospects, please?
Yes, ma'am. We're watching the coal markets or the energy markets transform before our eyes. It's been going on. It is not the result of environmental litigation. You're seeing bankruptcies at the Decker mine, Cloud Peak, which was the best mine, considered the best mine in the Powder River Basin. Also declared bankruptcy and went out of existence. I think that this is a trend that we should be thinking through about what that means for the funding in this state and these important programs that are funded by the Coal Trust. It's a really familiar story that we're seeing again and again. The Energy and Telecom Interim Committee did an analysis of coal markets a couple years ago. I think it's an easy place for an interim committee to start. Sonia Nowakowski did a great job of looking at the state of coal markets and what that means for the state moving forward. And I think that that's a good jumping off point for something like this. These are important programs to fund. And with market shifts the way they are due to competition in the energy market, I think that a study like this is really overdue. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hedges. Nicely done. Any further proponents?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, we're going to go next to opponents in the room. Seeing none, do we have any opponents on Zoom?
No, Madam Chair.
All right, informational witnesses in the room. Seeing none, how about those on Zoom, Ms. Simmons?
Yes, Madam Chair. The first one is Ms. Jenny Stapp.
Ms. Stapp, good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Stapp, S-T-A-P-E, and I'm your state librarian, and I am available for questions about how Montana libraries rely on coal severance tax funds to fund our basic library services. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Further informational witnesses.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to remind those who wanted to be informational witnesses to raise their hands at this time. We have Ms. Cindy Trimp.
Ms. Trimp, good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Trimp, T-R-I-M-P, from the Montana Department of Agriculture. The Department of Agriculture's Growth Through Agriculture program is funded through 1535-108. Coal tax severance. Myself and the agency stand ready to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Thank you. And any other hands up? Ms. Simmons.
Madam Chair, we have Ms. Anna Miller.
Good morning, Anna Miller.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Anna Miller. I work on two programs that are supported by the Anna Miller from DNRC, Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R. Anyway, I work on two programs, the Coal Severance Tax Loan Program and the Regional Water Program. Both of those are supported by Coal Severance Tax earnings and interest earnings off the trust. And I'd be happy if you have any questions for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional hands up, Ms. Simmons?
No, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Now we'll go to questions from the committee members. Do we have questions from the committee members? Mr. Trebus?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This will be for the sponsor.
Madam Chair, Rep. Trebus.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I have two questions. I'll start with the easy one, which is, approximately, what's the balance in the fund? I don't have the sheet in front of me that we had earlier in the session.
Madam Chair, Rep. Trebus, I'm going to give you a guesstimate, and we can always redirect, but I'm thinking it's about $1.2
billion. Yeah, okay. Second question, follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I noticed that in your amendment, we'll strike through the maybe the controversial piece on page 2, which is touching the principal or reallocations of the principal as part of the study. But since that's not struck yet on your bill, this is off the wall question. Could we just make this more fun. Could we use the amount of principal over that $1 billion, shave it off, and use it to develop nuclear energy in Montana, or at least study that as part of this?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a Trebus question. Let me go back to 2015, where there was a bill in the session, and a few folks, and I wasn't here in 15, may remember that the bill was to cap the fund at $1 billion, and then general fund, infrastructure, whatever, and that did not go forward. From my perspective, it is tempting to set that cap and then use the dollars. But I would remind you that we're already putting dollars in the general fund. And I'll go back to New Mexico, where they, as I mentioned, they have a very substantial balance. And they are able to really fund a significant part of their general fund with that balance. And that, personally, is where my comfort level is to continually build that savings bank, that sovereign fund. And secondly, I struck principal because it panics some people, and it was never my intention to bust the trust. But I think just getting rid of that language gets it closer to maybe a unanimous approval by this body. So thanks for the good question.
Thank you. Further questions from the committee members? Representative Dunwell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, a question for the informational witnesses. Jenny Stapp first, please. Madam Chair.
Ms. Stapp.
Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell.
Ms. Stapp, and please forgive me if I'm mispronouncing your last name.
I wonder how, if you are able to tell us how the precarious nature of the coal severance tax revenue funds lately have affected your program, your library program.
Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell, thank you for that great question. When I became the state librarian in 2011, our appropriation was $630,000 in coal severance tax funds. That reached a low about 5 years ago of right around $300,000. Our appropriation this fiscal year is $567,000, but we're only projecting actual revenue around $420,000. So we're already planning to leave nearly $150,000 of appropriation on the table, unbudgeted and unspent. And that's translated into the loss of incredibly valuable services, including a suite of online academic reference journals and online academic informational resources used by school libraries around the state. We simply don't have the confidence in the funds to be able to award contracts to vendors to provide these incredibly valuable information resources. I would point out resources that would have been incredibly advantageous during the pandemic when students were attempting to learn from home.
Representative Dunwell.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Duff. And Madam Chair, may I ask the same question of the other two informational witnesses? Is that possible?
Well, let's have the questions posed a little bit more tightly as to how they reflect on actually proceeding with a study instead of the absolute specifics of the individual departments, please.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, good point. Question for Ms. Trimp, please.
Ms. Trimp.
Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell.
Yeah, Ms. Trimp, Madam Chair. So how would a study on the coal severance tax revenue precariousness affect your growth through agriculture programs and any other programs in agriculture that you can tell us in the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell, the Department of Agriculture has minimal funding in the growth through agriculture coal tax severance, and we would be willing to answer any questions related to this study and certainly dig deeper if we need to, but overall, we're ready to answer some questions, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Trim. Madam Chair, may I ask the question of Ms. Miller, please?
Go ahead, Ms. Miller.
This is Anna Miller again from DNRC. We're affected on both sides of the coal severance tax trust, Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell, members of the committee. We do have an account on the spendable side and saw a depletion or a slowdown of coal tax revenues, and again had to not hire some positions, not move some contracts forward. We also are on the other side of the coal tax trust where revenue is coming in, the 50% that goes to its trust, and also seeing interest income down and things like that. Also had to look at holding back some of our planned expenditures for the year. I think a study would be good in seeing that, you know, what is happening with these coal companies, how that is going to affect the revenue. And I think that is going to help the agencies work with the administration and the legislature to be more prepared during the legislature. Here's some options. You may have to backfill to do growth through ag, work with conservation districts, spend money on the regional water systems or the TSEP program. So I think related to a study looking at that might give the agency some more information so they can better adapt to revenues changing, and also the legislature and the administration make decisions on how they would compensate for those things or change the current programs.
Sure, sure. Thank you very much, Ms. Miller. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Do we have any additional questions from the committee members? Well, I do have one for Ms. Miller, so I hope she didn't go too far away. Ms. Miller?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, I have two questions kind of rolled into one, and hopefully they can be answered relatively well. I know they will with great ease. First, would you explain what WASACT is and perhaps whether or not WASACT would be in a position to be able to help during a study of this nature?
WASACT is the Water and Wastewater Association, and it's a group of funders. It's funders from the Department of Commerce Treasure State Endowment Program. It's funders from the DNRC Renewable Resource Program. It's funders from federal partners that work on infrastructure for communities in Montana. And that group works on helping communities develop projects and then go through hire engineers and then get funding for those projects and move them forward. And we would certainly be available to help with the study in any way that we could.
Perfect. Thank you. Any additional questions? Vice Chair Fern, would you like to close on your bill?
Madam Chair, committee, thanks for the great hearing. I just want to leave you a bit with a crossword puzzle of some names to consider. You know, the other day we had that little bill called 170. What was it, hydrogen? Can hydrogen be a severance? Wind, solar, hydro. Can there be a mechanism for a contribution through severance as well? Why, we actually heard nuclear. And then we heard the sponsors say thorium. And after the hearing, I went up excitedly to the sponsor and said, do you know where there's a lot of thorium? No, I don't even know what thorium is. Said Montana-Idaho border. And finally, 5.5% principal interest. Is it attainable? And what would the difference mean moving forward? Those are topics that can be taken up in a study with all the other things said by informational witnesses. So let's pass this and let's learn about our trust and let's move forward for the next 50 years. Thanks much.
Thank you. And this closes the hearing on HJ6. Thank you, everyone. Now, we do have one more bill hearing. However, the sponsor of that bill is still in another committee. So I think that we should go ahead and take a 20-minute recess to wait for the sponsor of that bill. And in the meantime, I think that we're going to go ahead and look at what executive actions we possibly could take later this morning. So we will stand at recess until 9:45. Thank you.
Good.
Great. Committee members, please take your chairs.
Just one?
I'm not going to move to my seat.
What?
Do I have to move to my seat?
Go stand by your seat. Get your coffee and go stand by your seat.
You. Oh, sorry, yeah.
Get your coffee.
Oh, she's tired. Are you?
Members of the House Taxation Committee, we have a delay in our hearing our final bill for this morning, so I think we're going to go ahead and proceed with the executive actions posted on the whiteboard this morning. And first up, we have executive action for House Joint Resolution 6. Do we have a motion?
Madam Chair, do pass HJ 6.
You've heard the motion.
Sorry.
Vice Chair Fern.
Madam Chair, do pass Amendment HJ6.1.1.
You've heard the motion, and it was discussed during the bill hearing this morning. Can we go ahead and proceed with a voice vote? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, no. Proxies, please.
Representative Abbott votes aye.
Representative Rhonda Knutson votes aye. Representative Kearns votes aye. Representative Fielder votes aye. By proxy, all by proxy, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Ms. Sangray.
The amendment passes unanimously for House Joint 6.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, do pass HJ 6 once amended.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Let's try a voice vote on this one as well. All in favor of HJ 6 as once amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no.
Representative Abbott votes aye in proxy.
Representative Kearns votes aye by proxy. Representative Rhonda Knutson votes aye by proxy. Representative Fielder votes aye by proxy.
HJ 6, once amended, passes unanimously.
Thank you, Ms. Sangray. Up next for consideration is House Bill 516, as heard this morning.
Madam Chair, do pass House Bill 516.
Okay, do we have any discussion on the proposed motion? Representative Malone.
I like the bill. I guess I have some concern. I listened to the department and talked to the director, and I guess I would vote no to allow the director some time to get his act together. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Vice Chair Fern.
Sorry to interrupt. Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell has her hand raised.
As soon as Vice Chair Fern.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Boy, I'm kind of conflicted on this bill. I think I'm going to vote yes on it. I am concerned by the testimony I heard from Revenue. And the fact is, as I've just discussed with the chair, is it appears there needs to be a fiscal note for this bill based on testimony, but there was not a fiscal note. So if we're going to move it, we've got to move it now. I'm willing to move it and then see as it goes through the process, go to the other body. And if it needs to be amended, it can be. But I think the sponsor brought up some valid points. They're a pretty serious concern.
Thank you. Representative Dunwell.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I had mentioned that I worked actually for 6 years at the Department of Revenue and with the folks who worked in Property Assessment Division, as well as all of the other divisions. I worked in the Director's Office, Public Information Office, or so I knew a little bit about everything, and I did hear some of the stories. And, it's a dangerous business going out there sometimes to some of these properties. So I think this cuts both ways. I think it will help. It will help the property owners, have the courtesy of knowing when somebody's coming on their property. And then it will also, I think, protect the safety of our public employees who are our employees as a legislature. There are some challenges that we'll need to work with. A lot of people, actually, believe it or not, will hide their property. They will be expanding and adding new construction to their property, and they will hide it. And oftentimes, it's when these property assessors are out visiting another property that they will discover the hidden property behind bushes. And it's incredible, the stories and what some people will go to lengths to avoid paying their property taxes, like the rest of us have to pay them. So it does cut both ways. That is my point. I am going to vote yes, because I think this will do more good than harm.
Thank you, Representative Dunwell. I do have a comment as far as I really appreciated the sponsor mentioning how we need to turn our government back into working for its citizens instead of the other way around. And I think that we have become quite heavy-handed over some years, and we do need to start being more a servant to our residents and develop relationships in that from that perspective. So I will be voting yes as well. Do we have any further comments?
Question.
We have a question. Representative Dunwell, did you want to squeak in one more comment? You need to unmute, please.
Sorry, I didn't realize I had muted myself, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and I do agree with you. I too liked that the government should work for us. And I must say, my former colleagues, public employees, they are servants. They are public servants. And I just would like to say that just know that. Yeah, maybe there are one or two bad apples who punch the clock. I tell you, though, the overwhelming numbers of public employees, they work there because they want to serve the public.
Thank you.
Just like our staff. Thank you.
Okay, the question has been called. Let's do a roll call vote, please.
Vice Chair Fern.
Yes.
Vice Chair Welch.
Yes.
Representative Abbott.
Representative Abbott votes no by proxy.
Representative Brewster.
Yes.
Representative Buckley.
Yes.
Representative Dunwell.
Yes.
Representative Fielder.
Yes by proxy.
Representative Caleb Hinkle.
Yes.
Representative Kazmaier.
No.
Representative Kearns.
Representative Kearns votes yes by proxy.
Representative Rhonda Knudsen.
Representative Knudsen votes yes by proxy.
Representative Malone.
No.
Representative Marler.
No.
Representative Mitchell.
No.
Representative Sheldon Galloway.
Yes.
Representative Thane.
Yes.
Representative Trebus.
Yes.
Chair Beard.
Yes.
House Bill 516 passes 13-5. Madam Chair.
Thank you. This closes executive action on House Bill 516. Now, we will have for executive actions House Bill 191.
Yeah, I can. I move to pass on House Bill 191.
Do we have discussion on the motion?
Madam Chair, I would move amendment number HB191.1.1 to pass.
Okay. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I really like this bill, and I would just say with the amendment, I'll be supporting the amendment, but I would like to see it at the original 1700, and if what we need to do at the moment is 1150, that's fine, but certainly supporting this piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion on the amendment?
Question.
Question's been called. I think we're going to try a voice vote, please. All those in favor of Amendment 191.1.1, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Proxies?
Representative Abbott votes aye.
Representative Fielder votes aye by proxy. Representative Kearns votes aye by proxy, and Representative Rhonda Knutson votes aye by proxy.
House Bill 191, amendment passes unanimously, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I would move to postpone action on this bill pending a revised fiscal note on House Bill 191.
Without objection, seeing none, we'll go ahead and postpone final executive action on House Bill 191 as once amended. Thank you. Now, committee members, we are still waiting for our final bill sponsor, hopefully anytime, so we'll just stand down until his availability is made known to us. Thank you.
Yeah, it'd be Friday.
Members of the House Taxation Committee, we're back in order. And we have our final bill hearing of the morning, House Bill 432, being introduced by its sponsor, Representative Gunderson. Welcome, Representative, and please open on your bill.
Madam Chair in Taxation, this first time ahead, or that I've been in front of your committee since I got here in Helena two sessions ago. This is my third one. But I think I'm bringing you a really cool little bill. My name is Steve Gunderson, G-U-N-D-E-R-S-O-N. I'm from HD1, Libby Troy, Greater Bull River Valley, and it is truly the last best place. And my bill actually goes to Troy, Montana, which is the over in the north, northwest corner of the state. Excuse me. A 501c3 is a nonprofit organization. Simple, complex, or concept, and it's not really complex, and you don't have to really think it through. Why would we change the tax law somewhere around 2017 to start taxing a nonprofit when they are supplying low-cost housing to our most needy, low-income seniors that are on fixed incomes that are struggling at best to make ends meet? And they're thankful for this oftentimes life-saving housing. And I hate to say it, but no good deed goes unrewarded. Other than in the Montana tax structure. There, any good deed is met with a tax increase, hate to say. I'll use a senior citizen center in Troy, Montana, as an example. Troy Senior Center incorporated and built a senior center in the year 2000 for many older residents of Troy and also the surrounding area. They built a beautiful building with state and federal grants along with contributions from the public. There's a large kitchen and a huge dining area used for community events as well as low-cost to no-cost breakfast, lunch, and dinners. And I actually, being a senior, I've been over there a few times and it's great food. In 2005, the second floor was added, and they actually added five small apartments. Not holes in the wall, not mansions by any means, but 400 square feet, one-bedroom apartments with utilities included. The rent is $385 a month. They're comfortable, low-cost living quarters seniors can call home. In 2018, the Senior Center received notice from the Department of Revenue that residential rentals in senior centers do not qualify for 501c3 property tax exemptions. The Department of Revenue reevaluated the building's portion of that houses the rentals and started to assess that as taxable property. Previously, Troy Senior Center paid for special assessments and fees as required. But in 2019 and 2020, the tax bill increased $3,137 annually for buildings and improvements on that rental portion of the building. This portion of the building that only includes rental apartments has been valued by the Department of Revenue at $278,610. Why should we overlook the 501c3 tax exemption of these organizations like the Troy Senior Citizen Center? And why do high property tax evaluations need to be set on properties that supply low-cost senior housing? If we can't change the law to return them to a full nonprofit status, why can't we revamp the assessed value of these buildings? Maybe we could even do both. HB 432 is a start. We need to remove the onerous tax organization or on organizations that are only out there trying to supply comfortable, affordable senior housing to low-income seniors. Let's reward rather than increase taxes to nonprofits that supply a commodity to a sector of our population that needs every consideration that we can give them. Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Now we'll be hearing from proponents on House Bill 432. Do we have proponents in the room? Seeing none. Proponents online, Ms. Simmons. Do we have anyone with their hands raised?
No, Madam Chair.
Seeing none, we will go to opponents in the room. Any opponents? Seeing none, how about opponents online?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, how about informational witnesses in the room? Any informational witnesses? Seeing none here, how about on Zoom?
Madam Chair, we have Cheryl Cohen.
Ms. Cohen, go ahead, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Cohen, C-O-H-E-N, and I am the Housing Division Administrator with the Department of Commerce and also serve as the Interim Division Administrator for the Community Development Division. The Community Development Division administers the Home Investments Partnership Program that is named in the bill. And I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Do we have any further informational witnesses?
Yes, Madam Chair, we have Bryce Katz.
Mr. Katz, good morning again.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of House Tax. Again, for the record, Bryce Katz, that's K-A-A-T-Z. I'm a unit manager with the Property Assessment Division, available to try to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Katz. Do we have anyone else, informational witnesses?
No, Madam Chair.
Seeing none. Questions from the committee members. Representative Trebus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I can ask a question on every bill today. So this would be for Ms. Cohen, I think.
Ms. Cohen?
Representative, Madam Chair?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Cohen, my question has to do with the properties and the rent for these facilities. Is that rent? Are there rent ceilings or rent caps? And, you know, that's probably based on income.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, the Home Investment Partnerships Program is a federal program that limits the income and rent that can be charged to eligible renters. So this particular program must serve Montanans at 80% of the area median income and below, which is defined as low income by Housing Urban Development. And the rents are set to be affordable for households at those income levels for a period of affordability, which is monitored by division staff.
Follow-up?
Follow-up also for Ms. Cohen. And so it would be difficult for these housing, this rental property to pass on the cost of property taxes and such. They're pretty locked in. They can't really pass that on to the tenants. Is that true?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. They are capped to the HUD's home rent limits, which do have a slight adjustment on an annual basis, and they're updated annually, but it would definitely limit the ability of the property owner to shift a property tax burden in terms of an increased rent to the households.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair Fern.
Thanks, Madam Chair. This, too, is a question for Ms. Cohen.
Madam Chair, Representative Fern.
Well, Madam Chair, Ms. Cohen, I don't believe this bill specifies necessarily senior housing. I might be wrong on that. But are there other housing developments across the state where this bill would positively affect their eligibility for taxation?
Madam Chair, Representative Fern, we currently have approximately 70 home finance projects throughout the state. It appears many of those are already qualified under the exemption as a nonprofit entity. I believe the sponsor spoke to a couple of projects specifically with seniors And we do have two home-funded programs with those senior centers. But we have about 70 projects throughout the state.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Thain.
Question for the sponsor, please, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Thain.
Madam Chair, Representative Gunderson, I'm puzzling a little bit over the fiscal note. You referenced a facility in Troy, but the fiscal note shows no fiscal impact. Are you aware of other projects that might be in similar situation? And can you give me some insight into the fiscal note, Madam Chair?
Madam Chair, Representative Thain, when it says zero, I guess it's a zero. I can't really explain it more than that. If I would take the assumptions that number four, any workload associated with HB 432 will be absorbed, so that's going to keep costs down. I don't think it's really going to have any kind of impact, of any gross amount, or we would have a dollar amount on the fiscal note.
Follow up?
Madam Chair, Representative Gunderson. So I understand it might not impact the department. However, is there a loss of state tax revenue associated with these projects, or is it so minuscule that it didn't merit inclusion in the fiscal note, Madam Chair?
Madam Chair, Representative Thain, I think you hit it on the head that to the state, it's a little tiny thing. To the folks that I'm working with, it's a big thing.
Thank you, Representative, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Dunwell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Mr. Katz, please, Madam Chair.
Mr. Katz. Mr. Katz?
Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Katz. So I guess I would have thought that if this is these nonprofits, these 501c3 corporations, are truly on the list of IRS nonprofits, which is what the Department of Revenue uses, I would think they would already be exempt. So can you tell me why they're not already exempt?
Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell, that 501c3 designation is only one aspect of qualifying for exemption. There's other requirements as well. Specifically, you have to have that designation. Then there's usually an ownership and a use component as well. So based on the statute and specific to the property that the Representative Gunderson was speaking to, it didn't fall under any of the specific uses to qualify for an exemption currently. So there, just because you have a 501c3 designation doesn't automatically make you exempt. There's also ownership and use requirements depending on the type of exemption you're applying for that would also have to be met.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up.
So I guess that was my question then, if you don't mind, Mr. Potts. So why were they not exempted already?
Madam Chair, Representative Dunwell, so I guess there's a couple of different things that went on. So back in the 2015 legislative session, there was House Bill 389 passed that required all non-exempt entities in the state that were receiving property tax exemption to reapply. It was through that reapplying process that this property, we discovered there was the five rental units. So they were granted under 156209. Which is an exemption in statute specific to community service buildings, including buildings that furnishes services to senior citizens in the form of daytime or evening educational or recreational activities that are recognized in the state plan on aging adopted by the Department of Public Health and Human Services. But if you read further in that statute, It says there's also an exception that says does not furnish living accommodations to senior citizens. So we partially exempted that property for the portion that was used as the senior center. But if you read that statute 156209, there is a specific exclusion from those facilities providing living accommodations to senior citizens, which is why we were unable to grant the benefit on that portion of the property.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Marlowe.
I didn't have a question. I was trying to respond to a question, Madam Chair. May I?
Who are you directing this toward?
It was in response to Representative Thane's question about the fiscal note.
Representative Thane, are you open to that?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Marler.
The question had to do with why the fiscal note was zero, and I just wanted to comment that might be zero to the state, but the impact would be felt to local governments, cities and counties, and that's not necessarily intolerable expense, but I just wanted to mention that sometimes we get these fiscal notes and they say zero impact, but that's to the state and not the local governments.
Thank you. Duly noted. Do we have any additional questions from the committee members? Seeing none. Representative Gunderson, would you care to close on your bill?
Madam Chair and taxation, I think we'll find that this is a really small bill. Doesn't mean maybe a lot to each of us, but like I said, my folks over in Lincoln County, specifically Troy and the Senior Citizen Center, would like to see a little bit less taxes paid. Their taxes went up over $3,100 annually. They're a nonprofit. They don't have a huge income. Their income out of those rentals is $385 per month, and you can do the math, and not a lot left over to include utilities and the things that they do. One of the questions that Representative Thane had, and I think Representative Marler addressed it, is that, yeah, there will be some local government impact, but again, I don't think it's going to be a deal breaker. And we were doing it before 2017, and all of a sudden everything changed. And these folks aren't asking for retroactive give their tax money back. They're just saying in the future, help them get their tax bill down. And that's their ask. So I'm asking you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gunderson. This closes the hearing on House Bill 432. We will add this to our executive actions on Friday. Do we have any questions or comments from committee members at this point? Ms. Moore, do you have anything that you'd like to add or notify us about?
No, Madam Chair.
Representative Hinkle.
Madam Chair, I was just wondering, roughly how many more bills do we got to go through?
Oh, I'm just getting to that. Okay. Good question. Good timing. All right. Members of the committee, we have quite an agenda coming up for Friday, so please do rest up tomorrow morning because we have nothing on the docket for tomorrow. We're not going to make this evidentiary information for the other committee members, members amongst the House floor, because we have just been getting everything knocked out of the park in a very organized manner. On Friday, be prepared. I believe we have three or four bill hearings to do on Friday, and then we will have the balance of executive actions to take care of, and we probably, at the moment, we have five executive actions for Friday. So we'll plan to meet here again Friday morning at 8 a.m. Again, remember, if you advertise No meeting for tomorrow. You are at your own peril. Don't incriminate the rest of us. Thank you and have a good day. Meeting adjourned.